I call the conference committee for House File 2 to order. There is a quorum present from both the House and Senate. And this morning we will start with introductions, and we'll just go around the table for those. And Representative Katiza Watun, maybe you could start us off.
Good morning. Thank you, Mrs. Chair, Madam Chair. And I'm Representative Carly Katiza Watun. I represent 49B, which is much of the city of Eden Prairie, and I'm excited to be here.
Heather Edelson. I represent Edina and a portion of Bloomington, and happy to be a part of this committee.
Hi, I'm Ashley Eng. I'm the House Fiscal Analyst.
Hi, I'm Travis Reese. I'm Committee Administrator in the House. I work in the Workforce Development Committee, Economic Development Committee, and Labor Committee. So I saw paid family leave through all of them. Just a quick housekeeping note, particularly for the Senate members. The mics are on live, unless, and then you have to use the button to mute rather than the other way around, which I know that's what you used to in the Senate building. So just a reminder before we get started that mics are live.
Senator Elise Mann, Senate District 50.
Carlin Doyle Fontaine, Senate Counsel.
Hannah Grunwald Nolner, Senate Fiscal.
Senator Rob Kupek, Senate District 4, which is Clay in Western Becker County, Moorhead, Detroit Lakes.
Fabian Bean, Senate Labor Committee Administrator.
Maggie Peruzza, Senator Manz, L.A.
Danny Gillis, Senate DFL Research for Jobs and Labor.
Sam O'Neill, Representative Ruth Richardson, CLA.
David Sullivan, House DFL Research.
And I believe we also have some staff remotely.
Hi, Madam Chair, members. Marta James from House Research.
Thank you. And Marta's volume seems a little bit low.
This one. It's not super loud, really. Just go all the way to the top.
And I am Ruth Richardson, and I represent House District 52B. So next on the agenda, nonpartisan House Research and Senate Counsel will walk us through the bill. You can follow along using the side-by-sides in the corresponding document that is titled PFML Side-by-Side Walkthrough. And we will start with House Research, Marta James.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I will maybe take off my microphone.
Hear me better. Is that a better volume?
Yes.
Okay, I will do that. So I'm going to go ahead and get started on the side-by-side walkthrough, and I will be referring to the page numbers in the side-by-side document. So we'll start on the R1 with House Section 1 and Senate Section 1. So these are different provisions, and they provide for the treatment of the new medical insurance data for the new program. The Senate language clarifies that the data can be exchanged between DEED and DLI and DEED and Department of Commerce, and then adds the purpose for sharing that data. And continuing on R1, Section 2 for the House is a House-only provision. And this clarifies that insurance carriers can offer the paid family and medical leave insurance product for potentially a private plan. Continuing again on the R1, House Section 3, Senate Section 2. These are same provisions in both bills, and they add certain provisions of the paid family medical leave program to the sections that the DLI commissioner can issue a compliance order for. On page R2, there is House Section 4 and Senate Section 3. Again, these are same provisions. And this adds the premium deductions and employee chargebacks to the information that is required to be provided on the statement of earnings from employers that is already part of existing law. On R4, there's a Senate-only provision, and that modifies the medical assistance eligibility requirements for employed people with disabilities. It allows them to maintain their medical assistance eligibility during any time they are receiving either an unemployment benefit or the family medical leave benefits under the new program. On R6 and R7, there are a few House-only provisions. Section 5 on R6 makes the personal care assistant choice provider responsible for the management of the premium payments under the new program. Section 6 clarifies how the premiums would be managed under the existing CFSS budget model. And Section 7 requires a financial management service assistant to those participants who are seeking the paid family and medical leave benefits. Then on R9, House Section 8 and Senate Section 4, these are same provisions in both bills, and they allow DEED to use unemployment insurance data as necessary to administer the paid family and medical leave program. Starting on R11 are the definitions. That is House Section 9 and Senate Section 5. There are several similarities between the between the definitions, but also many substantive changes as well, or excuse me, differences for the terms in the new Chapter 268B. So I'll just list a couple of the definitions that are different. So there are different definitions in the House and Senate language for base period and benefit year. The House has a definition for covered active duty. And there are differences between the definitions of employee, employment, or excuse me, covered employment and employer. The Senate carves out seasonal employees, and the Senate also has language about employee leasing companies. There are some differences between the definitions of family care and family member. The Senate has a Senate-only definition for incapacitated person, and there are differences between the definitions of serious health conditions, 3 days versus 7 days. There are a few other definitions that are different, and then some just purely technical differences as well. So then jumping ahead, I'm now on page R24 of the side-by-side. And Section 10, House Section 10, Senate Section 6. These are different provisions. They both create the new Family and Medical Benefit Insurance Program and the new division within DEED for this new program to be administered and operated. The Senate goes on to specify that the employees in the new division will be in the classified service and also provides an exemption for certain statutory procurement requirements. There are other technical differences as well. On the R25, House Section 11 and Senate Section 7, these are different provisions. They require the commissioner to pay benefits to an applicant when certain requirements are met. So the House has clarifying language that these benefits are paid from state funds from this new paid family medical insurance benefit account, and they are not considered a special insurance plan or paid by an employer. There are other minor technical differences in this section in these sections as well. On the R26, House Section 12 and Senate Section 8, again, these are different provisions. These are pretty same substantive provisions about how the program would work. They provide for the benefit account requirements, the calculation of weekly benefit amounts, the timing for those benefits, the maximum length of benefits, and then the process and timeline for any amended determination under the program. There are a few differences I'll highlight between the House and Senate language. One is the maximum length of benefits. The House provides for a maximum of 12 plus 6 or 18 weeks of benefits, as well as an additional 6 weeks of benefits for only for pregnancy recovery or complications. So there could be up to 24. And then the Senate provides for a maximum of 20 weeks of benefits. There's also a difference between the minimum period for which benefits could be paid, 8 hours in the House and 1 day in a work week in the Senate. And the House also has some additional clarifying language about benefit accounts. On the R29, House Section 13 and Senate Section 9, these are same provisions, and they require the applicant to notify DEED of any changed circumstances when they're applying for the weekly benefits. All right, continuing on R29, House Section 14 and Senate Section 10, these are different provisions, and they provide the eligibility requirements for applicants. including what would be a 7-day qualifying event, and the certification requirements that an employee would have to meet for certain types of leave. There are, again, some differences between the language. The House refers to pregnancy and recovery from pregnancy throughout the bill. The Senate has removed the pregnancy language. And there are language differences for certifications and then other minor wording and technical differences. Well, a couple pages ahead on the R33, House Section 15, Senate Section 11. Again, these are different provisions, and they specify the content of the notice to the employer when an employee is granted benefits under the program. And so the employer would receive notice that someone had been approved and is going to receive benefits. The Senate has some additional provisions related to that that would allow the employer to submit relevant information and provide that the commissioner needs to ensure that only one family member is taking leave for an incapacitated person at a time. On the R35, House Section 16 and Senate Section 12, these are same provisions, and this establishes the appeal process that would apply for the paid family medical leave program provisions. It's very similar to the appeal process in the unemployment insurance system. Also on the R35, House Section 17 and Senate Section 13, again, these are different provisions. They provide for notice to employers about the need for leave, so employees would need to give advance or reasonable notice to employers when they needed to take some benefits under the program. And there's specifics provided for bonding and intermittent leaves and reduced leave schedule for the House only. There's some other differences in the language. The House provides a right to leave 90 days from the date of hire for applicants who meet the eligibility criteria. The Senate moved the 90-day start of job protection to the employment protection section. The House also has some language about how this notice can be provided, so it can be done orally, by telephone or text. And again, the Senate does not include a reduced leave schedule option like the House does, and the Senate has additional parameters for intermittent leave. There are a few other smaller language differences as well. On the R38, House Section 18 and Senate Section 14, again, these are different provisions, and this is the employment protection section. This is one of the provisions in the bill that the Department of Labor and Industry would be responsible for enforcement of, and it provides the employment protections for employees who request or obtain benefits. The House has some additional language regarding the waiver of rights and making those agreements void. The Senate has language excluding bonus payments that were paid, and the Senate also allows for like pay if the employer experienced extenuating circumstances. There's also some differences in the remedies subdivision regarding jury trial, the standard, and awarding of fees, and a few other smaller language differences. All right, I'm now on the R43, House Section 19, Senate Section 15. These are different provisions, and they provide the substance of the substitution for a private plan. So an employer would be able to substitute a paid family or paid medical plan or both that meets or exceeds the program's requirements. So those provisions are in both bills, but there are some slight differences. The House requires the commissioner to consider any coverage with respect to concurrent employment for the weekly benefit amount that would be payable. And the House, again, provides for intermittent leave in the minimum increment that employer offers, which can't be more than 8 hours. The House and Senate differ on the weekly benefit amount and duration. The House also has some clarifying language about private plans being able to be offered through an insurance product. And there are some other smaller language and technical differences. And then on the R49, House Section 20 and Senate Section 16, these are also different provisions that would allow a self-employed individual or independent contractor to elect participation in the program. They wouldn't automatically be covered under the program. The House and Senate have different calculations on how the self-employed individual's net earnings would be determined. The House looks at the most recent 2 years and the Senate the last 1 year. And then there's also a premium amount difference. So the House halves the premium that they would have to pay, where the Senate requires the full amount. And with that, I am going to turn it over to my colleague, Carlin, if that is okay, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Beginning on page R50, this is House Section 21, Senate Section 17. This is a similar provision for the House and Senate. It provides wage detail report requirements for employers. This models the unemployment insurance method. There are slight technical differences in word choice. The House language refers to missing information omitted under this section. Senate refers to missing under this chapter. Then on R51, House Section 22, Senate Section 18, another similar provision. This requires employers to establish premium accounts with deed. The House language makes a technical exclusion for employers with private plans. On R52, House Section 23, Senate Section 19, these are different provisions. This section provides specifics regarding premiums paid for the paid family and medical leave program with employee chargebacks. Includes a premium reduction for employers with fewer than 30 employees. Senate caps the annual premium increase at 1% of taxable wages paid to each employee, and there are other small language and technical differences. On R54, House Section 24, Senate Section 20, these are the same in both the House and Senate. This addresses federal income tax treatment of paid family medical leave benefits. On R54, House Section 25, Senate Section 21, these are similar provisions that provide for treatment of premium collection under the paid family medical leave program. The Senate language eliminates the separate enforcement account so that fees and costs would go into the family medical benefit insurance account instead. And that is throughout the bill where that enforcement account has been removed from the Senate side. On page R56, House Section 26 and Senate Section 22, this is the same for both. This provision requires a deduction from paid family medical leave benefits for child support owed. On page R57, House Section 27, Senate Section 23, again, these are the same, to allow the Commissioner of Deed to compromise certain amounts under the Paid Family Medical Leave Program. On R57, again, House Section 28, Senate Section 24, these are similar provisions, providing a percentage for administrative costs to Department of Employment and Economic Development. Senate language also adds interagency agreements with the Department of Commerce for this provision. On page R58, House Section 29, Senate Section 25, again, a similar provision, providing a percentage of the anticipated premiums collected for public outreach to deed. And the Senate language also here includes interagency agreements with the Department of Commerce for work that they can do. On page R58, House Section 30, Senate Section 26, these are different provisions between the House and Senate. This requires an applicant to repay overpaid benefits based on a determination or amended determination or a benefit law judge's decision. The House creates and retains the separate enforcement account, again, as I mentioned earlier. The Senate contains a provision regarding termination for misrepresentation, and that just specifies what is a termination for misrepresentation under this provision. On R60, House Section 31, Senate Section 27, these are the same. This provision sets penalties for employer misconduct. On R60, again, House Section 32, Senate Section 28, these provisions are the same, providing for record keeping and audit requirements for the paid family medical leave program. On R61, House Section 33, Senate Section 28, the same for both sides, authorizing deed the commissioner to issue subpoenas and oaths to administer the program. Again, on R61, House Section 34, Senate Section 30, these provisions are the same as well,
providing for a lien, levy, set-off, and civil action for amounts owed by an employer or applicant under the program. On R66, it's good, you have to turn a couple pages, House Section 35, Senate Section 31, these provisions are the same as well, to authorize the Department of Labor and Industry to provide conciliation services for violations of the employment protections provided in the chapter. On R66, House Section 36 and Senate Section 32, these are similar provisions requiring an annual report to MMB and the legislature on the paid family and medical leave program finances and a public report on benefit use and demographics. The Senate adds additional language on race and ethnicity of the benefit claimant to be reportable. To report those demographics as well. On page R67, House Section 37, Senate Section 33, these are also different from the House and Senate. This provision requires employers to post notices regarding rights and benefits under Chapter 268B. The House requires notice regarding the program to be given by employers to independent contractors. The Senate got rid of that requirement. The House also contains language requiring deed to prepare a uniform notice form in the five most common languages used in Minnesota. I believe there was an amendment offered also on the Senate floor, but the House does contain this provision. On page R68, House Section 38, Senate Section 34, these are also different. This provision allows an employer to require leave taken under Chapter 268B to run concurrently with leave taken for the same purpose under the Family and Medical Leave Act federally. The House contains additional language regarding the relationship of this chapter to collective bargaining agreements and to federal law. On page R69, House Section 39, Senate Section 35, this language is the same, and it is a severability provision that we see in bills from time to time. On page R70, House Section 40, Senate Section 36, these provisions are different between the House and Senate. This provision provides for small business assistance grants to defray certain costs of the paid family and medical leave program. The House grants are for employers with 50 or fewer employees for grants of either up to $3,000 or $1,000 for costs related to hiring temporary workers and for wages. The Senate is a little bit different, and it allows grants to businesses when more than 15% of their employees are receiving benefits under this chapter for temporary workers, and the grants are for temporary workers or increased wages based on a formula that's provided within the language. On R71, this is a Senate-only provision, Senate Section 37. This creates a direct care provider account. The money that is deposited in the account would be to pay 50% of the annual premium due from a direct care worker. On R71, another Senate-only provisions, Section 38, requires the Commissioner of Human Services, in collaboration with the Commissioner of Deed, to convene a stakeholder group, and the group would address issues surrounding the impacts of premium collection on direct care workers. It also would require a report to be submitted to the legislature with recommendations from the stakeholder group by January 1, 2025. On R71, House Section 41, Senate Section 40, these are the same for both. And this provision discusses paid family medical leave benefits that they may be applied for and paid starting on July 1, 2025. On R71, House Section 1, Senate Section 2, the same for the House and Senate, clarifies treatment of paid family medical leave benefits under MFIP and other assistance programs. This is Article 2, these all relate to the MFIP program. So, and then on R71, House Section 2, Senate Section 3, these are similar, clarifies treatment of paid family medical leave benefits under MFIP and other assistance programs. Again, the House language makes a technical change to update cross-reference numbers, and staff would recommend the House language because they made those corrections. On R72, House Section 3, Senate Section 4, these are the same. Again, clarifies treatment of the benefits under MFIP, Similarly, with R73, House Section 4, Senate Section 5, the same, clarifying the treatment of the MFIP, the benefits for with interaction with MFIP. On page R73, House Section 5, Senate Section 6, these are different. There appears to be a technical difference in the effective dates in interaction with MFIP benefits. The House language is effective when benefits can be paid, which is July 1, 2025. The Senate language is effective 6 months earlier on January 1, 2024. I am not certain why those dates are different at this point, but that can be discussed. On R73, House Section 1, Senate Section 39, these are different. This requires the Commissioner of Deed to contract with an independent actuarial. This is the actuarial study, so I'll just discuss the differences. But this is the independent actuarial consultant to determine the financial soundness of the family and medical benefit insurance program. It needs to be completed no later than October 31st of 2023. The differences are that the Senate requires the Commissioner to present options to adjust the paid family medical leave program if the study indicates that the premium rate is not actuarially sound. And then finally, on R74, House Sections 1 to 12, Senate Sections 1 to 13, this is the appropriation section, and they're different, and we will find out the differences as the spreadsheet walkthrough is done. And that concludes the walkthrough of the bill.
Thank you for the walkthrough. Any questions for nonpartisan staff? Not seeing any. Next, we will move on to adoption of some of the same and similar provisions. We will be working off of the document titled Paid Family Medical Leave, Same and Similar Sections Only, which should be in all of the members' folders. First, we'll take up a motion to approve some of the items listed as same in one motion, and then we will go down the list of similar motions one at a time. Seeking a motion to approve some of the items outlined in the prepared document listed as same by comparison, done by nonpartisan staff. This would include all of the same items except R35, R54, R61, and R69. We're starting with the same. So just to clarify again, this is just related to the same, and we're going to do the same in one motion. So I'll read that through again. Seeking a motion to approve all items outlined in the prepared document listed as same by comparison done by nonpartisan staff, except R35, R54, R61, and R69.
So moved, Madam Chair.
I just want a second to go through it all, but yeah. Okay.
Questions about the motion, Senator?
No, I just wanted, before we vote on it, I just wanted to go through and look at the sections. That's it.
I'll give members a moment to look at those. So I want to make a clarification around the R61, because looking at R61, there are two references. The one that we would not be adopting as part of this motion would be the R61 related to lien, levy, and set-off. Any questions about the motion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the same provisions that were identified are adopted. Next, we will start with the similar provisions, and we will be taking up some of the similar provisions today. And we are going to start on R51. Nonpartisan staff have indicated that there's some slight differences of wording choices in each of these provisions, and we will take them one by one. So starting with the R51, seeking a motion to adopt the So I want to move to approve the provisions on the side by side page. Where are we at? We're starting with the R51. And yeah, we're taking the Senate for this one. And this would be on Senate page 18. Senate section 18. And the bill page is 4421. So seeking a motion to adopt the Senate language of the R51.
So moved.
Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Moving on to the R54, similar language, looking to adopt the Senate language, that is Senate Section 21, Bill Page 47.15. That Senate language eliminates the separate enforcement accounts, seeking a motion to approve the R54. Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The motion prevails, and the Senate R54 is adopted. Moving on to the R57. Again, looking to approve the Senate language in this instance. That would be Senate Section 24. And that is Bill Page 51.3. And the Senate adds clarifying language around interagency agreements with the Department of Commerce. Looking for a motion to approve the R57 Senate language.
I'll move the Senate language, ma'am.
Thank you.
Any questions related to the R57? Seeing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion prevails, and the Senate R57 language is adopted. Next, we have the R66. That is, again, seeking this clarifying Senate language. This is Senate Section 32, Bill Page 60.20. and it adds race and ethnicity of the benefit claimant to reportable demographics. May I get a motion to approve the Senate language R66?
Madam Chair, I have this on R67. Is that
the section starts?
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I just wanted to also clarify, is the submission of that data optional based on the employees? Like sometimes, you know, it says like if you don't want to clarify on some of these forms, or is the department then required to share any information that they have about the person receiving the benefit?
So in terms of the data that would be received, it would be optional for it to be reported. So that it would be optional to report that data.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
It would be a requirement for the benefits. Any other questions? Okay. Did I get a motion?
Yeah. You did.
Okay. Yes. All right. Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. The motion prevails, and the similar R66 Senate language is adopted. Okay, so that takes us through the items that we were planning to discuss today. You'll note that there are some existing same and similar language that we intend to continue to do some work around. But with that, I will pause to see if there's any further discussion for today. Senator McQuaid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank both you and Senator Mann for leading this process, for shepherding this bill through of like almost every committee in both chambers. I thank you multiple times, multiple years. This is going to be life-changing for so many Minnesotans, and I just am so excited to be on this conference committee, but the work that you two have done with pretty much every stakeholder who's had a thought, opinion, question, idea has just been incredible. So thank you for that work.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions for the Catholics? Representative Katiza Watun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just out of curiosity, based on Senator McQuaid's statement, we know that we've heard this in many, many committees. There's been a ton of public input. You know, you both have done a great job working with the advocates. Will we, in conference committee, be taking any public testimony aside from the written testimony that's in our packets, or just moving forward with discussion on the differences in language?
So I will speak for myself because I'm holding the gavel right now. Made the decision to have written testimony as it relates to today. And, you know, in terms of what happens next, we'll defer to Senator Mann when she decides whether to take up the gavel. Seeing no other questions, we will
recess or adjourn.
All right, we will recess, and we'll let you know if we're going to be back later. Thank you all.